Jankum Pog ain't any engineer. Murph sits in the captain's chair, and the crew of the USS Protostar lets a young star become what it was meant to be. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Seventh Rule with Sirach Lofton and Bonnie Gordon.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
My name is Ryan T. Husk. Today, we're doing a review of the Star Trek Prodigy Season 1 finale. That's Episode 20, Supernova Part 2, directed by Ben Hibben, written by Dan and Kevin Hageman. What do you know? Our very special guests today are Kevin and Dan Hageman. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you guys so much. We can't wait to talk about episode 20. It's something that we wrote maybe two, three years ago. So it's so it's now like out
fresh on your mind.
This morning I woke up. First thing I was doing, I was looking on Twitter. What are people's reactions?
Yeah.
Are they happy?
Were they favorable?
They were favorable.
Very favorable. Loved it.
You know, one of the things right off the bat I can say now that we're at the end of this first season is this first season of this show is extremely memorable. Like I can go back and I feel like I can trace their story. Maybe not the titles of the episodes, but I have a good feel of the characters in the show off of this first season. You have just like really hit it out of the park, and congratulations for just making a great show.
Thank you. I think it's a testament to writing before you animate. And I think there's a lot of, like, we've worked on productions where you're writing as episodes are coming out and you're racing to keep up, and sometimes you make mistakes and you don't have time to go back. But I think what we were really fortunate in this season was, again, everything you saw in episode 20 was in the pitch for episode one, for when we pitched Nickelodeon. And then when we got the writers room in, we were able to, I think we took about 9 months, 9 or 10 months to write all of the episodes. And then COVID hit, and then we all scattered. So, and then it was all up to Ben Hibben and his terrific team to realize all, you know, and also we are very dense writers. So there's a lot of stuff that's on the cutting room floor as well. We had to be very judicious with what stays in the episode and what comes out.
I have to be honest and say that I always thought of animation in as a different writing tier than live action, like films and television. I always thought it was like, oh, it's like, you know, it's less work, let's say, or it's not as detailed, or it's not
easy.
As in depth.
It's easy.
It's easy. Yeah. The easy stuff. Like I thought, you know, like I could do the, you know,
your doodles, Sirach doodles, whatever.
Sure. I know how to do a fart joke.
Yeah. And so there was a common belief for me that was just a degree of easier than, let's say, writing a film or something. But having watched this show, it feels like this is just on par with any other kind of writing that I see on film and television, and it's wonderful to watch. And I think I got insight to that when we talked with the Benson sisters about, you know, them getting on board and animation not really being their thing. And so it didn't matter that it wasn't their thing, because it's what is the qualifier here is quality writing. And I think that's one thing that really shines through the product when I watched this show.
Yeah, we had to really convince them, you know, from day one with them and all of our writers or all of our team, this is not your ordinary, you know, Nickelodeon show. This is not your, you know, ordinary animated program. Like, this is going to be epic, guys. And we need top tier writing and directing and art design and everything.
Well, I think in terms of writing too, Kevin and I have experience writing features, animated live action features, and animated television. And it's you never like pull back the punches when you're writing something. You're like, I want to deliver the most powerful moment, the most powerful character moment, you know, regardless if it's a Ninjago episode or if it's the Lego movie, you know, you're doing everything you can to entertain. Cause I think, you know, and so, you know, animation writing is normal. Most people will attest, like it's no different than live action animation, writing. It's just about the process of how it's made in terms of fabricating the assets and the animation, that takes a little bit different. And also in which you can kind of go back and rewrite little mistakes if you've had, you have a little more opportunities to fix those, which is, I think, a big reason why animation feels a little tighter than live action.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to actually kind of jump on a little bit what Srok was saying initially about the looking back after 20 episodes. Like, I was realizing a similar thing 20 episodes in. I was like, wow, I really know these characters well. You know, a lot of shows, they do focus on character arcs. They do focus on story and all these kind of things. But it really felt like 20 episodes in, and 20 short episodes, mind you, you have to tell stories mm-hmm. in a very small amount of time. I felt like you really had your characters fleshed out before writing these episodes. Like, you didn't just kind of like fly by the seat of your pants and see how the characters develop. It felt like you spent hours and hours and hours upon hours really fleshing out these characters before writing script one. And it shows. And I just kind of want to know, how important was it for you as a team to really dig deep into these characters and know them as if they're a real person sitting right next to you, saying the words, and you're transcribing it into a script?
I will have to say, like, I imagine some live action shows, you know, you get your pilot sold, suddenly, hey, they want your show in production in 3 months, and they're building it, and, you know, and you are forced to suddenly dive in and start creating episodes, and you're trying to figure out the characters along the way, or you might not know your ending yet. You know, we were given that chance to have a little bit of time there to dive into the characters from
but I think we have, like, you look at, I think it's episode 4, where like Dal sees a vague vision of his parents. It's like, that's the way you see these characters. You see their silhouettes, you hear their voices, and you kind of like, you make them indistinguishable from each other. But when you get into the writer's room, that's when you really get a chance to really dive deeper, and you try to distill them to like one word. Like, Rock is empathy. Zero was curiosity. Dao was self-assuredness. I don't know what went, but you try to figure out exactly where they are, so you know that, like, when something happens, you go, well, this is how Rock would react to that, or this is how Zero would react. And so it's really nice to have, you think of it as like a little lunch with different compartments, and you have your peas and you have your carrots, everything's in there, all different places, and you just see how they interact with one another. It's fun.
Well, it's fun also having the time to know, let's say for Dao, we knew who Dao was, right? From the very beginning, we figured it out in the writer's room. And so because of that, in episode 4, we could have him having that vision. What does he most want? He wants to meet his biological parents, right? And so what a beautiful tease and setup to that character arc to make that reveal even more harder when we find
that out. Yeah, that was an episode where, as a writer group, we are trying to understand who these characters are. Well, what would Rock dream of? Well, Rock just wants to be loved, you know, things like that. And it really helps to find these characters.
Usually when I watch the shows that we review, I usually watch it on my laptop. And for this show, I found myself going to the TV and making sure I can watch some TV, because I like to see, like, I feel like there's so much detail in the animation, right, that I want to get to soak it all in. And
it's amazing.
So watching it on the big screen has been kind of a joy for me. I've been secretly watching it there. I don't watch Deep Space Nine on the big screen because I'm like, I know what's going on. I don't need to see all the details. I was there. But with this show, I actually feel like, oh, I got to watch the details. And the details, specifically in this episode, I really enjoy the animation, for example, of the battle scene when they're exiting the battle scene with the Protostar and they're trying to get away. And Janeway says, you know, what are they doing? She's like, saving us, you know? And then the whole evacuating the Protostar and Janeway, hologram Janeway, kind of going into supernova mode, you know? When you guys are doing this animation, I said A+ on the animation. When you guys are writing this stuff, and then you see it, you know, one, how pleased are you with it? And also two, what kind of adjustments do you or advice do you give to the animators for a separate, you know, maybe you want something different. Maybe the supernova looked too big or you wanted it more colorful. Do you do those kinds of notes?
Well, do those kinds of notes, like let's say the supernova, that will come to all of us through concept art. And so we'll have this gorgeous painting or something done or a drawing that we can all look at and discuss and address. In regards to animation, like I find, like, so we'll get animation back. Our animators are over in Technicolor over in India. And so we get this early animation back.
We get batches, yeah.
We get batches. And what I find is like Ben Ebon, our director, and Patrick Krebs, one of our producers, their eyes are totally tuned into the animation, right? They know, oh, they're just using a walking cycle here. Well, we really need this character, not just this classic walking cycle. We need to see them limp a little bit or whatever. They're catching these little animation details or the lighting and this and that. They're really good at that. I find like when we're watching it, our notes are always about character moments. Well, their face, there's like Jankum's face here is not, his eyes need to be bigger. He needs to look more surprised.
Or even in the supernova, I remember originally there wasn't a shot of the explosion or the, we didn't have time for it. We're like, we need to have time. It needs to look like a rainbow in space. Like, mm-hmm. You know.
Oh, like, that was my favorite shot. Like it was so beautiful.
And then they come back with something even more poetic. And you're like, oh, that's brilliant. Mm-hmm.
In which shot was this?
When the protostar exploded. Yeah.
See, when I especially noticed it was the very opening scene. You guys do an amazing job with opening scenes. The first shot you see, you're just blown away, like, whoa, this, you know, is like an exterior shot of the battlefield. But then also the very last scene was unbelievably colorful with the ship going out. We had the flags down at the bottom, sun. Okay. Blue in the middle, you had pink down in there.
It's colorful, just like sky,
unbelievable.
Yeah. It's gorgeous. That's Ben, our director, and Alex, our art director. Like, yeah, you get whatever it was, whether it's the board cube or whatever. Like, we would always have these things in our script, and then they'd come back with the concept art of here's the board cube, or here's the map painting for the final shot. And we're like, it's greater than we ever imagined.
And I'm so proud and so thankful. Yeah. All of our directors have done a wonderful job. And it's like when we know that Ben is directing an episode, we know that it's like the most culinary chef, like,
yeah,
who painstakingly looks after every detail. Because it's like those are things that Kevin and I do on the script phase. And Ben is like our brother from another mother in terms of how he sees visuals and the cinematics of things.
And you said Ben Ebon, right?
You know what? We didn't know until like 2 years in. I remember we always called him Ben Hibben. And then a journalist had asked how he pronounced his name. And I even think we're still butchering it a bit, but it's French Swiss. But Ben
that would
Ebon.
Be Ebon. Yeah. Ben
Ebon. And we were so mad at him for 2 years going by. And he never corrected us. It's like someone going, hey, Kevin Hogemon. Yeah. I'm like,
I butchered y'all's name when I first, I think the first bucket, because I never heard it said out loud.
Yeah.
And I was like, the Hagemans. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And everyone was like, I think that's wrong. And I'm like, I think you're right. I'm being really quiet this episode because I feel like I'm being really quiet this episode. And I think it's just because I'm really just sitting here reflecting on everything and just being so, feeling so lucky and proud to be a part of a project so special. And this episode just was the perfect like bow on the present. It just it closes up everything so nicely, but then also opens up the next chapter.
And but it's so fun to have you on the journey of like, even not even the show, but you know, from very early on in the early casting and things like that, you've been, you know,
but you've been stuck with me from the beginning.
Well, there was a leg of just the writers, but enough. But then, like,
yeah, that's okay. Too.
You started.
I think I came in only when you guys just started getting concept art.
Yeah, and it was great getting the feedback because it's like, again, we're in an incubator and trying to writing these episodes, and it was really great to get outside perspective from real big Trek fans. First, it was David Mack. David Mack was the first guy reading the scripts, and I
remember
he did notes on Time Amok. He was like, this is one of the best time travel episodes ever in Trek. And we're like, oh my God, like, Are we, is this real? And then people like Bonnie who are massive Voyager fans and massive Trek fans. It's so great.
I was refreshing my inbox waiting for when I was doing Scratch and getting the full scripts, I would just refresh waiting for the next one, trying to see what happens next.
These Thursdays are the best, you know, when you get to wake up and you get to look at people's reactions. Being here with Dan at our parents' house for the holidays, you know, I was able to come out into the main room and we're both like, they liked it. They liked it.
High five.
We did it.
There were some tearjerker moments in this one. Oh, man, when Janeway, when hologram Janeway records that message for them, and they're like, why is she so small?
Kevin and I are blubbering mess because we've watched these episodes how many times?
I had countless times.
It only gets worse. It only more you watch this episode, right? When you find out that her memory chip is not big enough for her, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Kevin and I just started like, I go, oh, mm-hmm.
Janeway.
We don't get numb to it. You think like you get numb watching something like that episode. I never get
But we
numb.
Love the characters nice. So much. And then even too, like the little moments between Dal and Gwyn.
I was choking up for the hologram Janeway. I had to remind myself it's a hologram. You can bring it back.
I had a couple quick things I wanted to say.
It's not really
there.
It's a
hologram.
It's a hologram.
Because there's been precedent for this before. I remember I kind of recognized like this was almost like an homage to the EMH doctor in Voyager. Because in Voyager, you know, the EMH was a hologram that his program kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And things like that really... You know, it triggers something in the mind of the Star Trek fans where we're like, this is so Star Trek. I know because this is a real thing.
Yeah.
Another thing I want to say about that real quick was that Bonnie, you seem to have almost the line of the episode for me was when you said like insufficient storage or something like that.
Insufficient data memory.
Right. Right.
One of those.
Said,
yeah.
Bonnie when Kittle. You said that Bonnie line, Kittle. we all
nailed
think,
it.
Uh-oh. This is the moment.
We probably always say it's an homage to Iron Giant. I mean, Iron, you know, to us.
Or E.T. You know, we wanted, you know, as we've mentioned before, our entrance into Star Trek was the Wrath of Khan film. And that had an extremely powerful ending, right? And that's the best stories. E.T., the Iron Giant, those are the movies that stuck with us. When I look back and I just love what I love, it's because they really went there emotionally. And so we wanted to do that with this show so that people didn't forget us, that we stood out and that we were, you know.
And I think in the pitch, it was what always moved us was, you know, the mentor that they come to love, they have to let go of. But at the end of the rainbow is the real Admiral Janeway. And that there was a little bit of like, we felt like that had to be the ending because it's not just an ending, it's a beginning. It's like, they get to Starfleet, they get to Admiral Janeway now, season two, you know, that just opens it up, so.
Yeah. And what a journey.
And she goes to bat for them again in front of Starfleet, like, I'm defending them, I'm gonna defend their actions. I love the way that scene transpired too, because those kids got to hear what they did vocalized by somebody else who was advocating on their behalf. And I felt that was a bit critical moment for all of them to just say, hey, yeah, we did do the right thing. It was a validation for all the decisions that they had made prior to that.
And that Dal got in too. That was special.
And thinking of that moment always gets me too, when he expects, like, five of you got in. He's like, okay, I get it. I
was. And he's totally cool with it. He was like, no, it's cool, like, guys.
Yeah, I'm happy for you guys, right? But here's what I just want to like highlight Kate and Kate Mulgrew's performance. When she says, in that moment, she says, Dal, you got in. It's so powerful how she delivers that line. And there's countless moments in that episode where Kate, her delivery is so powerful. Her voice just grabs you, right? Oh.
And it's all like
in that speech. Take. Yeah.
It's always
like
a
first take
too. Yeah. The speech when she's the hologram and when she's Admiral, like just the, it was this episode, I feel was definitely a heavy Kate episode, a Janeway episode, which honestly, what more could we ask for?
Well, then her last line, I love that, like, the kids see the new protostar.
Oh, yeah. And she's like, I have bigger plans for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you watch the episode a second time, now that you know what happens, you know, it's so powerful, you know, when she delivers those little nuanced lines that when she finds out that she won't fit on the chip. And Dow comes in, he's like, hey, you ready? And she's like, well, now you've got two of me. And you hear her voice tremble.
Yeah, crack.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kind of, yes.
Yeah. She's holding back the.
She's holding it back.
Kevin and I are like, oh.
And she's able to perform that with just a voice. Usually, actors, you know, we can use our face. They can do movements and but we heard it in her voice. She's telling a story right there.
And then when the kids leave and they're like, all right, well, we'll see you on the other side. And they're about to leave. And she's like, you know, the door's about to close in her. And, you know, she's like, wait, you know, I just want to say, you know, you hear that there's a faint, there's an urgency.
She needs a final,
tell you, I love you before I go off and die, you know?
No, I felt that emotion. Actually, there was just a general sadness in this moment, in this episode. That, I mean, it was a kind of a happy sadness. It's a weird thing to explain because it's like, it's like situations coming to resolution, but there's a sadness to it. It's like, you know, when you graduate high school and you know you're not going to see a couple of people for a long time. There's a happiness that you're going on to college or whatever, and then there's a sadness that, you know, that this little yearbook entry might be the last time I talk to you for who knows how long.
There's like a tap. Oh, go ahead, buddy.
Oh no, I was also gonna say, I want to give a shout out to the kids because they were missing for a month. They were in that little bitty shuttle for 1 month.
How did they get back?
Survive, because they didn't have navigation. They used their brains. I don't know how they slept or use the bathroom or anything like that. We won't go into those details, but
that's but
also the maturity of the moment that Dal and Gwen had when they did that little pinky touch. I loved that little pinky. Yeah, that was such a mature and poignant moment for the both of them to kind of grow up. They both grew up to me like in that moment.
Yeah, and going back to what Bonnie said about them on the shuttle getting Starfleet on their own, it had to be that way. It couldn't be, hologram anyway. Say I
input saving them.
You know, can't be them bringing them. They have to get themselves to Starfleet. That's the way they earn it. You know.
Now I do have a beef with you guys because this kind of bothered me for a second in this episode. Right. Yeah. The moment when Dal says, "I'm going to go down with the ship," right? He basically volunteers himself to really sacrifice himself. And then hologram Janeway's like, oh, I can do it, right? And then Rock Talk is like, but Janeway, we need you. And I'm like,
that about Dal.
Yeah.
Rock was like, yeah, I'm Dal, tired
I'm like,
you.
Hello.
Yeah.
But Janeway, no.
There was Rock's empathy for Dal.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
yeah. That's a good catch.
She missed. We'll say that line got cut.
My top lever, like, you know.
Yeah.
I just
I think they kind of rolled their eyes when Dal said it because it's just like the standard captain, like I'm going down on the ship. Like,
there's still a little ego in
this.
There.
Is more about you than it is
about. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But what about the hologram? We're gonna miss you. And I'm like,
Janeway, no. Dal, you can stay. Janeway comes with us.
Yeah, I accept that bone to pick.
Yeah.
That was funny.
No, but so much you guys left us on that's one thing you're very good at too on this show is leaving me every episode like saying, damn, it's over. Like I want to give me some more. And I always feel like I want more when the show ends. And
especially this one. I was like, wait, what? Yeah. It boom, ends right there. And we're like, what?
I'm like,
what are you doing
ship?
To us?
What's better than that? What's better than the new ship they just revealed in this really cool, Wheel of Fortune or Price is Right way, you know? I'm like,
behind curtain number four is the Protostar 2.0.
I heard a little Voyager, a little hint of the Voyager theme song in that score when they were revealing that ship, by the way. That was beautiful.
You guys leave us wanting more.
I mean, that whole episode, Nami, like, I think Nami said her favorite score was 18. I think she just recently told us, but her score 20. I mean, she just hit all the emotions.
She's great. Gosh, yeah. Her music's so good. She's like, I can't wait to see what other crazy things that she accomplishes, because we're going to hear her music everywhere.
She will. I mean, she already is doing like Marvel movies and stuff. And I'm like, mommy, don't cuss.
No, she said she'd always come back for Prodigy. So that's good.
And that's another thing. I'm glad you mentioned it, because I also thought the music just added to so many moments of emotion. Like when the Protostar exploded, they had this really great music playing throughout that. And you could just see the moments of softness in between characters. The music would enhance those moments. So I'm glad that you brought credit for that.
You know, lucky together, to have a composer who loves the show. You know, I think that, you know, to make music, I'm sure there's a lot of composers who are doing things for a paycheck, but if you love the show, you bring out your best, and it's, you can hear it.
You could feel it. Yeah. I thought the line that embodies the show was when Rock Talk says, I think, you know, or the line is, a young star becoming what it's meant to be, which is, you know, when the Protostar kind of went. And I felt like that's what this group of kids are. They're young
stars.
They're
all young stars, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Becoming what they're meant to be. And I just like, we're that's great. How they,
I think,
it's a metaphor.
Yeah.
I think any time in any entertainment, whenever they show a parent saying goodbye to their child in college, I get so sad. Because now that I have kids, and I can't. That moment is just going to break. I think that that's what the whole show is. It's, you know, Hologram Janeway being like, all right, kids, it's time for you to grow up and you no longer need me. You know, you're just like, oh my goodness.
But we do, Janeway. We do.
Well, now you get the real her. So
the real thing now.
Okay. Don't be dissing Hologram Janeway.
Yeah, we love the real Janeway. She delivered an amazing performance. We also got some like, we got into the 52-year time ripple Chakotay thing, which I'm like, I want to find out what's up with Chakotay. Like, I know he's, and so that's a whole nother like season two coming on with that, and I'm excited about it.
Also Gwen and Saul.
Gwen and Saul, with Chakotay, we promised to deliver the goods, and I know there was a little bit of a tease throughout season one. But we wanted it to take its time and develop correctly. And there's a lot of, you know, time
first,
put
first
to
season
him.
Had to be about the kids. Like, yeah, it'd be about the legacy players.
It couldn't just be about Janeway and Chakotay. That was the C story.
You have to invest in them. I mean, because a lot of fans don't know Chakotay and Janeway. So now they know them. Now we can go to season two.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully season three.
Hopefully.
Sorry, I'm crossing all my toes.
No
and
doubt about
out.
It. This show's way too good.
Yeah, this show's too good.
There's no way.
But today's TV climate, it's totally frightening for all of us.
Yeah.
There's great shows.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
Yeah. I loved so much things about the last little improvements you put, where Rock Talk has got the xenobiologist kind of offer
with Dr. Aaron. Yeah. Good moment.
Dr. Aaron.
Yes.
I was like, I know that voice.
Yeah.
And I really loved Zero's new suit as well.
Yes.
I thought that was so cool.
Everybody got a little upgrade.
You think about it, it's Wizard of Oz. When they get to Emerald City, they get upgraded. They get to transform into, you know, moving forward into becoming who you are. And, you know, for us, it's not only that for the metaphors that their characters, but we've mentioned before, toys. We want toys, and we love having action figures and seeing, you know.
You got to sell more than one Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, you need Luke Skywalker.
Hoth, Luke Hoth Skywalker.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right.
We want
love
to
it.
Upgrade each of our kids.
Your season 1-0. Your season 2-0.
Yeah, and we want season 1-0. He's janky. He's junk. You know, and then as you see season 2-0, they're going to be more polished and, you know, and updated and
sleek. It looked really good.
Sleek. Yeah.
Looked really good. And I remember thinking, I was like, I didn't realize that I was rooting for Zero to get an upgrade until I saw Zero get an upgrade. I'm like, yes. It's about damn time.
Yeah, poor Zero. He's been falling apart. He's been losing an arm every episode.
Yeah, they're a walking junkyard, you know. Yeah. So come on, we gotta give them a little. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I also noticed one other thing that made me very happy was it was kind of subtle, but following it into the long tradition in Star Trek and science fiction, where not everybody that's dead is actually dead forever. It sounds like you let us hold out hope that the Diviner is still out there, a different version of the Diviner, a younger one, or one in a different time, still hopefully played by our good buddy, Mr. John Noble, I'm hoping.
He's so good. Yeah.
but that was really interesting. We heard that, we caught that, and that's maybe something for season two, or maybe it's just another seed that you've planted in season one that can come out in season three or season seven or anything like that. Do you ever have any 14. Thoughts? Do you ever have any thoughts of like, we're planting this seed, but it's not going to be revealed in season two, or it's not going to be closed in season, or where you're just putting stuff out there for long
haul? We're planting a seed. We know we're watching it grow.
Like, I can't stand shows where they plant a seed that excites me and they just totally ignore it or abandon it, or just not smart enough writers to figure out.
Oh, so you've seen Lost.
The goods on your expectations.
Yeah.
So whenever we're planning something, it's
nice.
We plan to pay it off. Yeah.
I'm excited about that as well. Because I always had a feeling that Diviner, you know, we're dealing with a species that we don't really know about. So there's all type of opportunities for stuff that we don't know about. So I'm excited to see where the Diviner goes, because I do think that's a character that showed a lot of redemption. And mm-hmm. I think we've talked about this before, but I don't know with you, but one of the things that I like about the Diviner is the complex nature of his character. It's kind of reminds me, I've said this before, but of a Gul Dukat type of villain, where he's not just one way. There's certain aspects of him that are redeemable and characteristics that you actually could root for, especially for the love of his daughter.
Yeah.
I don't know if when we first came up with the Diviner that we knew there would be a redemption arc for the Diviner. We just knew that he was the engine to be chasing the children mm-hmm. to get to the Protostar. And then it wasn't until I think the writer's room. We always knew Zero was going to use a memory wipe at some point. But I think it was in exploring what would happen to a person who's been brainwashed into this mission. I mean, for the Diviner, he was one of 100 to come back to a point in time to find the one ship that could save his planet. And so regardless of like the pressures on him, and that would define who you are. But if you were to memory wipe that, you know, what are the echoes inside his heart that are reverberating? And it's, I have a daughter, you know, as much as I've made this daughter to complete my mission, I have a daughter. You know, and the fact that that's the first thing, you know, I think that's the type of storytelling we like, is that, you know, if you strip down humanity's worst things, the best things are in there as well.
Mm-hmm. You're giving everyone out there with daddy issues hope.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a little intense.
I can snort.
I do have I know we're probably running low, but I have a final question, kind of non-Star Trek related a little bit. And that's because I know you guys have kids, and it's funny to me when I see, for example, a musician or an athlete, and their kid's favorite athlete is not their dad. It's like their dad's.
No way.
It's something else, no way. Right?
No, it's so not cool, dad.
I'm saying there's no way they would pick their dad, you know.
No, they're not picking their dad. They're picking somebody else. And so my question is basically, what kind of animation or shows are your kids fans of that are not your product?
Oh, my daughter, she's 13. She loves anime. She loves like Demon Slayer and
Pokemon.
Anime, okay, Pokemon.
Dragon Ball Super, Dragon Ball Z. My son, who's 9, is just, you know, like that's what all the kids are talking about on the playground.
My son, though, actually, he doesn't like much TV. He likes more like YouTube stuff like that. He's mm-hmm. 9 years old, but like he loves Prodigy. Like you can see on his face when you watch his new episodes, he glows. But he's always been someone who has loved space and stars and like our minds have been blown together talking about wormholes. And he always asked me questions to pass on to Dr. Aaron McDonald and Dr. Aaron McDonald back answers, and it's touching.
She's like, this is from a 9-year-old?
Yeah. Think of all the kids that you're inspiring to get into science and space. Yeah. And
that's our hope.
I think that's the most exciting thing. Because I have a nephew, he's turning 2 in February. And even, you know, we put stuff on and, you know, he visually likes things. Obviously, he doesn't understand prodigy yet. He's a little young for that. Yeah. But like, I'm so excited for him to get to an age where he understands it. And, you know, me being the crazy aunt, I'm sending him like, I send him, you know, to Dr. Aaron's space, big babies first, you know, Star Trek, space book or whatever, like all those things. And my sister's like, Bonnie, stop. Like, he can't even understand any of this yet. And I was like, but he will. And he will.
He
like
can
it.
Understand yeah. Murph.
Exactly.
Yeah,
right. We're in awe of the shelf life of Star Trek. We talk about that too, about how like people 20 years from now will be watching Prodigy for the first time. And they'll be going through all the emotions that you guys are going through. They may think the animation looks janky, but you know, just because it's 20 years from now. But I mean, people are watching the original series for the first time. People are watching DS9 for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
It's great.
Well, you know, a lot of people, there was a live show like last week that I was doing, and we asked, you know, just a very general Star Trek question on which series would be the best series to introduce somebody to Star Trek, not kids, just anybody. Yeah. And almost everybody was saying Prodigy. And that's got to feel really good that mm-hmm. not obviously for children. I think that's a very clear answer, but
it's
they were saying for anybody, it's very palatable. It's very easy to watch. It's very fun to watch. You get it when you watch it. And it's like a gateway drug to Star Trek. And you're going to create so many new Star Trek fans.
Absolutely. Well, just thinking, like seeing some of the stories people have been sharing on Twitter, like where, you know, when Prodigy had that 10 episode break after the first 10, where kids were like, I want to see more. I want to see Janeway. I want to see this. And so parents were putting on Voyager and Next Gen just to show their kids that there's so much more. And now they're all watching Star Trek together. And I'm like, what a cool feeling that something that they probably would never have wanted any interest in watching. And Prodigy was that introduction to this vast universe. Now it's going to take them years to get through. Good luck. Yeah, good luck, kid.
The co-watching aspect, I think, is so beautiful, is that generations can watch the show. And now, I mean, I remember when we were kids, we'd watch The Cosby Show with mm-hmm. our parents, Roseanne, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a great time to have the family all be entertaining the same thing at once, because it's like, that's a rare thing.
We had really TGIF when we were growing up.
Yep.
You
know? Yep.
Yeah. TGIF.
TGIT now.
Well, and you know, it's hard to have one episode drop every week. And I'm so excited that all 20 are out now.
Yeah.
Because it really is a giant mini series. You know, it's really what it feels like as a whole. And I think the experience of just being able to watch it, not in one sitting, but to be able to watch it in groups and spend the week or whatever and watch it.
But if you were, it would take about 7.5 hours in one viewing. You go through 1 through 20. Yeah.
Well, Paramount Plus, now's your time to send out those promo codes to all the people that don't have it.
One Avatar movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, one Avatar movie.
Yeah.
This guy who plays Dal, what's his name?
Brett Gray.
Dude, he's amazing. He has really carried. He's carried his weight and more on this show as the lead on the show, and just watching him kind of his subtleties in his voice and his inflections in certain points are just so, you know, poignant. And I love the fact that he's kind of gotten a little bit of the cockiness humbled throughout this season. And he's really kind of matured into a great leader.
He's had the best character arc, I think, the best growth as out of the kids. Mm.
That was one character that I think the voice of Dal was different in her heads when we wrote it. And I think the voice in her head was very tropey. It was like a Han Solo roguish. I think we were going down the tired path. And then we heard Brett Gray and we're like, oh my gosh, this is, he sounded like to us, Chris Tucker, like a young Chris Tucker. And we're like,
it's such an infectious, an infectious energy and joy about him.
And he brought, he brought this season.
Absolutely.
He has this like fun kid perspective, but you know.
Yeah, I'm
and
so
there's optimism too. Yeah, there's an optimism in his voice. Like
it transcends. Yeah, it really comes out of his voice.
Yeah.
You can really feel that enthusiastic and impetuous kind of energy coming out of him. And I keep saying, I know why Ciroc likes him so much, because they share the same birthday, he and Brett Gray, which is pretty awesome.
Really?
I think.
And have you seen, he's like this like super big pop star. Like he's this.
Yeah, he's a.
He's oh, really?
People are like throwing their undergarments at him and stuff.
Check out
Brett Gray's videos or his music. His music's fantastic.
Oh, cool.
Wow.
I think his new
season. He is born on August 7th then.
Hey, see? Hey. Same year too, right, Ciroc? We only have you for another minute here. And first of all, I just want to say thank you so much for making the time. Your schedule must be unbelievably busy, especially this time of year and with the final episode and everybody begging for your attention and your time. And we really appreciate you doing kind of like a schedule Sudoku to squeeze us in. So thank you very much for that. And thank you for the,
well, we appreciate you guys for, you know, for going in depth into the episodes and talking about it and getting the word out. Cause it's a hard show to find for some people. I mean, I understand for Trek fans, they're easy. It's easy to find, but to find a new audience, it's in today's climate when there's so many things to watch, you know, so we really appreciate you guys promoting it.
Thank you.
Keep putting out hits like this, and it's makes our job super easy.
Totally.
It's rocking. Enjoy watching this show.
It's such like, joy this watching show is show. So fun to watch and chill. This is great.
And Dan, Kevin, thank you for letting me be a part of the journey too.
Oh, it's my been, God. Come on.
It's so been so wonderful. And then Ryan and Ciroc got stuck with me. So honestly, it's just been a domino effect.
Thank you. I'm
just yeah, when Bonnie said to you guys, she said, you guys have been stuck with me since the beginning. Ciroc and I were like, same.
Yeah.
That's us too. Got staying power. This girl's got grit.
Yeah. She'll never leave.
Yeah. No, you're such a joy, Bonnie.
Thanks, guys. Thank you. Yeah. It's like, I can't even tell you how much this journey's meant to me and like people in my life, like my friends that are in Star Trek and just following it with me, and everyone just loves Prodigy. It's been I mean, honestly, I don't think I've met anyone that had any negative thing to say about it. Once they actually sit down and watch it, they're like, wait a minute. I'm like, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Well, how long do we have to wait? How long
when is season 2? Yeah, I was
toying with that thought too.
I was thinking about that. Wait? I know.
I think you'll see it in 2023.
Okay.
It should be next year. All right.
Well, that was my question, was will it at least be 2023? Like that's because we know animation and what they're creating, these visual effects artists, is going to take forever.
Yeah, I would guess 10 episodes you would see in 2023.
Yeah. I wish people were more like, hey, we love season 1. Thank you. Let us like,
give me more. We got any more? It's like that that Dave Chappelle.
I need another one.
You got
any
more of them Prodigy episodes?
Yeah. Just give me the IV, man. Just give me the IV.
All in 10 hours, and then
just give us a moment, okay?
All right.
Three years of life.
You've earned a hiatus. You've earned
a moment. Yes. Yeah. We can't honestly. No, but season 2 is turning out to be so stunning. Again, a fantastic, beautiful, big, you know, second chapter, I guess, to this.
I can give a little tease where Jake Black, who is a big fan, who's now working for the Star Trek greater proper, he was one of the very, very first fans of Prodigy and like friended us from the very first image.
Oh, yeah.
His whole family loved it.
His whole family. He has got like 3 children and what was great was when he got a job at Star Trek, he got to watch all of the episodes, even I think he's probably watched all of season 2 by now as well.
Animatics.
Everyone's like, what? It's animatics.
And so he was like the first person, we met him at a Star Trek function, and he was the first person where he was the first fan who had watched episode 20. And I'm like, what did you think? And he's like, oh my God. He's like, he's like, I didn't know how you guys could top it after the first season, but you did in season two. And so he was
you got our palate wet.
It's different. Yeah. It's like going to a different restaurant, though. It's a different. It's same characters, different show. I mean,
it's a whole new chapter, right?
We met them on a whole like another planet in a whole prison colony situation. This is like this is Starfleet now.
It's a reset because it's like you look at the show, the last couple episodes, yeah. Everyone's like, it gets better and better and better. It's because the journey is getting closer and closer, and you're with these characters. But then you gotta you can't stay at that. You can't be going around loops on a roller coaster the whole time. You gotta get off the ride, get onto a new ride and go, what is this one?
Mm-hmm. But I have to say along with that, there is, there's a lot of unanswered questions that we've set up in season one that we will dive into in season two. So there is a continuation.
Is it going to be 20 episode seasons? I know we gotta run, but my interest is very
20.
Wow, beautiful. All right, so
we
do have
to
run.
I want
to
see what that Cation is up to. That's what I want.
Yeah, I'm still waiting. I'm never going to give up on that Cation. I'm going that's going to happen. Whether it's season seven, I don't know, but I'm waiting on that Cation. But we do have to run. So Dan and Kevin, thank you so much. This has been amazing. We really appreciate you. Keep up the good work. Go have fun. Do whatever you do, and we'll be waiting with bated breath for season two. And everybody at home, stick around. We've got the free-for-all up next. Oh, let's give some very special thanks to some very special people.
Oh, I do my thank you dance. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
Get that thank you dance ready.
I'm ready.
And their names are, of course, Homer Frizzell, Dr. Anne-Marie Siegel, Eve England out in Wales, Yvette Blackman, Tom Carmen, a.k.a. Skillet, TJ Jackson Bay out in Missouri, Bill Victor
Arukin,
Titus Muller, Darlena Marie, Dr. Muhammad Noor, Tierney C. Deekman, Anna Post, Rex A. Wood, Anil O. Palat, Joe Balsarati, Mike Gu, DQ, Neil Akasaka, Justine Norton Kurtzen, Dr. Stephanie Baker, Carrie Schwent, Faith Howell, Edward Foltz, Mai, live from Tokyo, Matt Boardman, Chris McGee, Justin Weir, Jake Barrett, Jane Jorgensen, and of course, Dr. Susan V. Gruner. Thank you all very much. Thank you to Dan and Kevin. We will see you all on the other side on the free-for-all. And until then, always remember the seventh rule. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to the seventh rule with Sirach Lofton.
Hello, hello.
This is the free-for-all. We've got a few shining stars joining us for this free-for-all. By the way, very special thanks to the Hagman brothers and Bonnie Gordon. They are no longer here, but they wish us the best in this magnificent final segment with Melissa Longo.
Hi.
Wearing an awesome seventh rule shirt. We have Eve England out in Wales also wearing an awesome seventh rule shirt. That one's made by Melissa, though.
Mm.
Actually, the purple one that Melissa's wearing was made by our good friend, Mr. J.J. Lendl.com, I think. Carrie Schwent is here. It looks like there's a lot going on in your shirt over there. It looks like a lot of Star Trek characters.
It's from the poster from the most recent Star Trek cruise.
Wow.
It's got everybody that was on the cruise on it. They had an artist draw.
How did you get it from the poster to the shirt?
Bought separately.
Okay, so
they had the poster artwork printed on t-shirts in the shop on the ship.
It's awesome. Sirach's got to be there. Yep, I see him right under your golden lock.
Yep.
Other side. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other Sirach Lofton, Goldu Scott Jensen here, aka the evil one.
The East Coast Rock, I'll do that.
We don't have to make sense here. Melissa, can you start us off, please, and tell us if you had a chance to watch this episode, this season finale, and if you've seen all 20 episodes, and which one was your favorite, and what you know, just what do you think of this episode?
I was like, I love this episode. It might be my favorite, actually, of all 20. If it's not, then it's way up there, but there's a few I haven't seen in a while. But I love this episode. I was moved to tears in more than one spot, starting with when the kids are in the shuttlecraft and they're holding each other's hands, hoping to get out of the way of the protostar safely. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, you know, it got my attention and the sense of urgency was there. And I found that I have developed a love for Janeway because of Prodigy.
Mm-hmm.
The character Janeway because of Prodigy. I respected her definitely in Voyager and in what she, her relationship with Seven and then, and Cass and to an extent, B'Elanna in Voyager. But I think she shines in Prodigy because it demonstrates her true strength, which is she's a great teacher. She's a great mentor. And in many ways, she's a great parent to all of the kids on the protostar. I love Janeway in this show. I thought the kiss between Gwen and Dahl was so cute.
This time was meant to be, right? This time,
yes, it was so sweet. Approved. And the little pinky thing was so great. But I have to mention my favorite line in this episode was, is there a better living embodiment of what our alliance represents? And that spoke so, spoke volumes to me because being a multi-ethnic person myself, I've often been described as, you know, a walking United Nations. In a way, because there's so much in here. And I think it's wonderful that Dahl is a representative of that living embodiment of diversity. And I think it's wonderful that kids get to see that and see that walking embodiment of diversity be accepted and be celebrated be a hero of a story, you know, because there's a lot of kids out there that are like Dahl, who are multi-ethnic or come from many different backgrounds. And so it's great to see that represented. So that was one of my favorite parts of the episode as well.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, Melissa, I think that you made a really good point about Janeway because I don't really know her character on Voyager. But one thing that does stand out to me is her sensitivity to the children and the way she's interacting with the kids brings out a side of her that I don't think I have previously thought of her as, because I usually think of her as very like rigid and not as sensitive and caring as she comes across in this show. So yeah, I think this does add a dynamic to how I perceive Janeway too as well.
Yeah. And one last thing, shout out to Dr. Aaron McDonald, who got a cameo. Well, I was watching it this morning. I was like, wait a minute, that looks like Dr. Aaron McDonald. Right. It sounds like her too. And then I paused in the credits. I was like, it was her. Yay. So awesome. That's all.
Yeah, she's officially immortalized on stage now or on screen now. That's pretty amazing.
Part of canon. Mm-hmm.
Is she the one that hands Rock the pad?
Yeah.
The xenobiology suggester.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I had that weird tickle of familiarity too.
Mm-hmm. Eve England also wearing purple. I think Sorok's wearing a purplish like lavender. Melissa's wearing purple. Yeah. Scott, Carrie, and I didn't get the memo, but
well, your backgrounds are there. Your background.
I got a lot of
So what's up with you, Eve, out in Wales? Did you enjoy this episode? What'd you think?
Yeah, I did. I've been really surprised with how much I've really enjoyed this whole track thing. I mean, I think it's continued to shock me as we've gone through how it's much more adult than I think most people would have expected from it when it was just, you know, sold as a kid show. And what I really liked about this episode, including the last one, is how it sort of evolved, I think, as the season went on, you know, and you had quite dark things happening in the last couple of episodes. I mean, you had the Diviner's plan actually, you know, coming to fruition, and you had those battle scenes, and there was obviously loads of people were killed in you know, in that battle. And that was quite, you know, the end of the last episode was just such a cliffhanger in terms of, well, this is just so dire, you know, what's going to happen. And then, you know, then you actually had the hologram die effectively, which, you know, is quite traumatic. Yeah. And then, but what's so beautiful at the end is that, you know, you really sort of grow up with the kids throughout the show, and that, you know, we see them at the end where they're pretty much adults and they're standing on their own two feet without Janeway, the hologram that they've, you know, been relying on the whole way through, and how they've become their own people. And now they're starting on their new journey in Starfleet. And I thought that was just such a good arc throughout the whole season, you know, with the kids and how we really get to know them and how strong they become. You know, and when Rock, you know, has that quote about, you know, just letting the star become what it's meant to be. And it's kind of the, you know, a description of what they've all gone through this whole time. Yeah. I mean, I just found it beautiful. I was just watching it and just seeing, and the way that they constructed different sort of perspectives of the shots was just beautiful. I just love all the colors and the color palette of it. It's very purpley and turquoisey and pinky, and it's just beautiful. Mm-hmm. And just one final thing that what I just absolutely loved, I just love Murph's top knot. It's just hilarious. And I'm not sure that's what they intended.
What do you call it, a top knot?
A top knot, yeah. And so it's just so cute and adorable. And I'm looking forward to seeing how Murph develops as well, and whether he's going to be the kind of, you know, the Groot of Star Trek. And I really enjoyed it, and can't believe we've got to wait a long time now to see what happens.
You know, Eve, to your point, when it started, I felt the same way about, oh, this is going to be like a kid's show. So in the beginning, in the really early beginning, I didn't give it any kind of credence or credit for being like, oh, this is going to be challenging me or interesting for me. You know, this is, let me watch it through a kid's eyes and see how they would like it. Now I just watch it through my own eyes now, but it's great how they left me, like, in the beginning, and in most kids' TV shows, it's like there's He-Man and Skeletor, there's the bad guy, and then there's the good characters, right? So there's the Smurfs, and then there's Gargamel, and it's usually, you know, our Popeye and Brutus. But what I'm saying is it's very basic in that kind of way, where it's just like, oh, that's the bad guy, and these are the good characters, and we'll watch them constantly batting heads. And I thought that the Diviner was going to be his role in the show. So I was like, okay, get used to the Diviner being like the bad guy on this show. But clearly it's much more than that, and there's way more adventure in store for them, and it's not that basic. So, like, kudos to the writers for kind of giving us more and making it more of an adult show.
Yeah, I agree.
Yep. Family show. Fun for all ages. It's the one show that everybody can enjoy forever. Just like Carrie Schwent, we can enjoy her forever. How are you today, and how much did you enjoy this episode?
Good. Everything Belisa said, I absolutely echo. Just one tear prick moment after another. I had in my notes, I had to designate HJ and then AJ to keep the two Janeways separate. Hollow Janeway and Admiral Janeway. And the look on Hollow Janeway's face when she realizes that her program isn't going to fit on there, that was the first, you know, domino to start falling. The whole episode is just the end with a just nice sort of warm fuzzy blanket, even though Gwen's taken off to go unify her people. I love that nickname, that the name that Zero gives her. I hope we get to see more of that. It's going to be interesting to see what kind of time travel shenanigans they get into trying to rescue Chakotay. And yeah, just so many. And my favorite line is actually just hysterical when they're trying to figure out how they're going to stay secure in the shuttlecraft with no chairs. And then Gwen says, yeah, we're just going to put in the hold on to your butts grab handles. I love that. I laughed out loud at that line. I even rewound it a couple of times because it's one of my favorite lines from Jurassic Park. So I love that line, period. And Jane and the Hollow Janeway having her own go phrase, like go fast. I like that. It's very, very good and differentiates her from Flesh and Blood Janeway, which I really liked.
I think she borrowed the go fast from Dahl, because right. I think that was his phrase.
It was a nice homage to him.
Yeah, I had forgotten that. But yeah.
And the name that was given to Gwendolla was Gwendolla the Unifier. I thought that was
mm-hmm. I love that.
So, yeah, that was very, very sweet. And her Gwen and Dahl's little canoodling and whatever that room was just adorable. They're little just hanging out, leaning on each other, just enjoying the silence before they have to separate. Mm-hmm. It was very, very just adorable. And yeah, just the whole series as a whole. Yeah, like Sirach said, you go into it not sure what you're gonna get, and then slowly get kind of sucked in and enjoy it because you like it. Very similar situation when my son was little, him watching SpongeBob SquarePants, and I got sucked in, and now I think I like it still to this day more than he does. I've even gone to the SpongeBob musical.
Oh
dear.
Yeah, and
that was fun.
it's a lot of fun. I highly recommend it if you're at all into Broadway.
I was wearing my SpongeBob Mermaid Man and Barnacle shirt earlier.
I can't tell if you're joking, Sirach.
Yeah. No, I was wearing it. Nice.
But no, it's and before I forget, I have one last haiku for the last episode of the season. I've got Protostar destroyed, crew accepted to Starfleet, Gwen has to go home.
Yeah,
those have been fun.
Gwen, I was kind of sad home. When Gwen had to leave, but I didn't realize she does have a mission.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good one too. I'm actually excited about that. I was kind of pissed mm-hmm. when they ended right there. I was like, wait, what? You can't do this to me. Yeah. Like, what? Especially because it doesn't like fade out. It just stops. And we're like, wait, what did you do?
Well, they could now they have two storylines going. So they're going to have Gwen's story, like an A B plot type of thing.
She's going to have her own adventures.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of adventures, when Carrie Schwent mentioned Enjoy the Silence, Goldu Scott thought Depeche Mode. Am I right? No. Yes. Goldu Scott is here.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's all I ever wanted. What did you think of this episode?
This episode was great, man. It was a great cap to what, like Sirach had said earlier, probably the best first season, I think, of Star Trek show, man. This was one grand slam after another, and it was just like on and on and on. And the thing I really loved watching this is like Melissa was saying, how it is so inclusive. It's so inclusive to all these different characters. This crew of these kids are all very different from each other, and they are all working together, and it shows children that harmony, and it shows us that harmony is so valuable to figuring out problems. It's not just, you know, good for it. It's essential in many cases. And then I love how the inclusivity also of us being adults and kids and teenagers. And I could pretty much just everybody check the show out. I had I posted something up on Facebook about it after I'd watched it, and one of my friends was like, "Oh, cool! I've been meaning to get into Star Trek. Do you think I should start here?" And I was like, "You know what? Yeah, exactly. Sure, go ahead, start right here. It'll give you a nice rundown. It explained a temporal explosion, right on screen to where it made sense. It was great. Yeah, loved every bit of it. I love that the show does not have a problem taking chances. There is, I did not think we would have saw what we saw last week. I didn't think that we would have saw, I kept saying, okay, well, I guess that's the end. Okay, I guess, oh no, there's more. Oh wait, now they're in a courtroom. Oh wait, we have a snotty Vulcan admiral. Telling them, another snotty Vulcan admiral. It should stop. You spend time on D Space Nine or something and you're feeling angry at everybody else. Poor Vulcan. But and then you had the payoff with that. And then you have a payoff with a new ship. And then you have a payoff. And it kept on going. And I'm like, there's absolute zero chances for they're taking all the chances they can. You had a main character essentially die with Hollow Janeway. Mm-hmm. You had another character leave. You had the ship blown. I mean, all it's just boom, 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 back to back. And then to set them up in Starfleet like that, and that beautiful statement, like Melissa said, about Dahl being the representation, a walking representation of what Starfleet and the Federation stands for, which I always felt that Saru was very much that as well, is that you're this diverse group of people. It's 100%. He is like a living embodiment of everything, quite literally. She said out of 120 different species, he's like 95 of them. Yeah, and he's so much that.
He's 26.
Okay. Yeah.
If there's any way we could have him be a recruiter, that would probably be best. Yeah. And I saw one background thing that I was wondering if this clicked with anybody else or not. But there was in the background, because this is set, is this 10 years after DS9 ends?
I think it's like seven or eight or 10. It's like right in there. Yeah. Or right.
This is post.
After Nemesis.
Is it? Why? What'd you see in the background?
Romulus is gone. Yeah, Romulus is gone. And Janeway's been back, obviously, for a while. Enough for Chakotay to
be
promoted. And for her to go to Vice Admiral as well. Because she was just a regular admiral. We saw her in the movie. So this is probably about, I would say maybe 10 years after DS9 at least. And Lower Decks is, what did we say, six years? It's not too far after, or 3 years after DS9. And I saw this one character in the background that there was this like quiet little Orion lady in a blue uniform standing in the background with her hands down, like in a science uniform. And I was like, what if that's Tendi, like a couple years after Lower Decks? Ooh. That would be really cool if they had thrown that in there just for a little, little Easter egg and just let it sit. But I don't know. And then seeing Dr. Aaron pop up like right after that was like, oh, maybe it was Tindy. I don't know. I kept looking for Muhammad too. I was like, where's he? Muhammad's gotta be in there somewhere. Somebody say something about biology. I want to see Muhammad walk by in a blue shirt. But yeah.
Okay, so real quick, the answer is it takes place 4 years after Star Trek Nemesis. So it's really just like right after what we last saw. So yeah, so just a couple, maybe 6, 7, 8 years after Deep Space Nine, right? Is that about right? Something like that.
I only know star dates.
Yeah, I can somebody tell me some star dates, we can figure out the math that way, right?
Okay. Man. Yeah, I don't know the star dates too well. I just know Google pretty well. Google knows me. A couple points I wanted to make too that we didn't get a chance to make earlier was our good buddy Deborah Wilson again, who was from The Sound of Her Voice, the episode, as well as Mad TV and a million other things. And she was the voice of the Klingon captain in the episode 19. I think it was Tridge, Captain Tridge. She also did a voice. She just played like an officer that was doing something at Starfleet headquarters or whatever, but it was just nice to see her name in the credits again. Man, if you look her up on IMDb, she is doing a ton of voiceover. She's killing it. So good for her there. And I like to hope that Deep Space Nine got her a pretty big start in that direction, it might seem.
Oh, the sound of her voice has actually inspired the sound of her voice.
Catapulted it. And I think we were talking about a minute ago about the color schemes. I fell in love with the color schemes from the second we first saw the main title sequence before the episode one. And they've just, their VFX team is just light years ahead of anything. They're just amazing. It's just beautiful. It's incredible. It's jaw dropping.
That sky at the end is so nice to look at.
So gorgeous. Or when the protostar went supernova, colors that came about from that was great.
Yes.
So beautiful.
All right. Well, Soraka, any final thoughts before we close this out?
It was just been really fun to watch these characters kind of grow up. I remember when Rock Talk was insecure and kind of shy, and now to see, you know, all that experience and going into xenobiology and all of that stuff. It's so fun to see that kind of, and I'm seeing it in my own, you know, in my own daughter's life, just how, you know, as she's getting older, she's starting to know the things that she likes more and what she's into, like, you know, what subjects she's good in, you know, those kinds of things become more apparent as you get older. And you say, oh, well, I like, you know, science and math, or, you know, I like reading, you know, writing, or then you start to realize sports that you like and athletics or different things that you're into. She's crocheting blankets and stuff like that. So she's just always doing new things and trying stuff. And it's funny because this blanket is it's the biggest blanket I've ever seen, but it's only this wide. That's it. But it's like a football field long.
Nice.
And I was like, you might want to make it a little bit wider. Otherwise,
it's a slip and slide now.
You have to wrap yourself like a mummy with this blanket.
A Doctor Who scarf.
It's an ascot.
So, but just, you know, just seeing kids kind of experiment in life and go and grow and figure out what they're good at, what they like, what they dislike, and interacting with other people, meeting new people and having to interact, you know, watching Jankum when he met the other Tellarite was so fun. And I'm not short. And just all of the jokes and the fun. So I've been pleasantly surprised. I guess one good thing is that my expectations were low, kind of, in the beginning. And it's just like jumped over all of those expectations. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's one advantage that they've had, because a lot of Star Trek comes in there with the high expectation. You're like, oh, this better be better than, you know, this better be better than all of the other Star Trek. And it's a hard expectation. And with this one, I kind of had a low expectation. Like, all right, let's watch this little kid's Nickelodeon show. And now I'm like, oh, this is good. Yeah. These guys are good. And I shouldn't be that surprised, because I did get to watch a little bit of Ninjago from my experience with kids. And that show is really good too. So it's surprisingly good. Like I said, you know, just sat back and watched an episode out of nowhere, and you're like, this is really good. Like this ninja show about these little ninja Lego guys is really cool. So they have a history and track record of actually making quality. And I shouldn't have been that surprised, but thankfully I am, because it makes it that much better watching this first season. Just that much better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was very, very, very pleased with this season and every single individual episode. And we have really been spoiled here. So I want to thank the Hagemans and their team and people at Paramount Plus and Nickelodeon that made it happen, because you guys really made our days better and you made our weeks and months better. And I think it's really cool that, you know, like you said, Sirach, Rock Talk started, you know, Insecure. And then it was Murph who's insecurity. Remember? Oh, and went into that department.
Took a second.
Stop there. Anyway, well, let's get out of here, everybody. Big ups to the Star Trek Prodigy team. Really knocked it out of the park. Grand slams, as Scott Jensen says. And we really appreciate all of their incredibly hard work and can't wait to watch season two in like a month or two, right?
Yeah,
how many times am I watch season one again before two comes out? That's the question.
There you go. Yeah. Plenty to catch on the second time around. Well, thanks very much to Melissa Longo for showing up today. Eve England out in Wales, Carrie Schwent and Guldu Scott. For myself and Sirach Lofton and Mr. Aaron Eisenberg, thank you all very much for joining us. And until next time, by the way, go tell everybody at Paramount Plus, go on Twitter and say, I love Prodigy, and let them know how much you love it so this thing can get renewed for a third season. Let the Hageman brothers know. Let Aaron Waltke and the Bensons and everybody know what an amazing job they did. Thank them for coming on this show. Thank them for their tireless work and tell them how much you love it. So we'll get 10 seasons of this thing.
Yeah.
And we'll see you next time. Sounds on good. The Seventh Rule.